Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments I'll be shining the spotlight on the Pope's Cathedral. Speaking of the Pope of Hearts, 50 years on. And respecting our weekly rendezvous with our popular Latin lover. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. As you'll know, just a few days ago, on November the 9th, the Church remembered the dedication of St. John Lateran, a dedication which marked the commemoration of the first public consecration of a church, one which today one always refers to as the Pope's Cathedral. Stay tuned and find out why, with
Father Jim Pugliese, director of the Rome-based Ecumenical Centre Centro Pro Unione, run by the Atonement Friars, of which he is the Superior General.
Yes, mainly because St. Peter's was a pilgrimage place. It was the tomb of the martyr. And the cathedral church of the Diocese of Rome has always been St. John Lateran's. In fact, that was the residence of the popes up until really modern times, because, you know, the summer residence used to be the Quirinale, which is now the presidential residence. So the pope lived in the city of Rome as its bishop. And because of political changes, that is, with the unification of Italy, the removal of the Papal States, then the Pope really was restricted to this little small area, which is known as Vatican City State, another country. Technically, St. Peter's is a very large church, but it's not even the parish church of the Vatican. You know, we all know St. Anne's is the parish church of Vatican City. So it's, we might just say, a big neighborhood church. But, of course, it's the center for all pilgrimage of people here to Rome, because where Peter was martyred and where Peter was buried became a place of worship from the early times, Constantinian times, who built the first church there and then made it larger and larger. So technically, the Pope doesn't have a cathedral in the Vatican. There's just a parish church in the Vatican. But his cathedral, since his first and foremost, the most important title, is Bishop of Rome.
Why Bishop of Rome?
It's an ecclesio and ecclesiological reason, obviously, because it is a local church that was founded here in the city, first among the Jews who accepted Jesus as their Messiah. And then we know that Paul came to the city of Rome, and he worked not among the Jewish community, even though he was always Jewish, but among those were the Gentiles, the so-called pagans, that would have been the Romans or the Greeks that lived here that were not of Jewish origin. And so this church is founded on these two pillars, Peter and Paul, one representing the unity of the peoples to whom the gospel is now being preached, those first to the house of Israel, and then secondly those, as Israel's mission was to all of the world, to those outside of the house of Israel. And so this became a local church, like a church in London, in New York, Chicago, Buenos Aires, wherever. And so this was the seat of its head, which would have been the Bishop of Rome. So this title is a very important ecclesiastical title, because it's a sacramental title. Title of Pope is something that's added on as almost as an honor. We know that some churches call their bishops Papa, just like we do, and Papa Shenouda, for example, the Coptic Church in Egypt. It just means it's the father of this church. And so the original title and the most venerated title is being the Bishop of Rome. And we notice already in Benedict XVI, coat of arms, the tiara is not there. It's the bishop's mitre. So he is underscoring the role that first and foremost is a sacramental role, that he is bishop of a local church, a particular church. It's not just any particular church. It's a church that was founded here in Rome by the two apostles, Peter and Paul, and a church which was sanctified by the lives of many martyrs, which is the reason why Rome was so important, because of the quality of its faith in the past. I'm sure with the former Cardinal Ratzinger, this point is very, very important, especially as he looks towards the re-Christianization, if you want, of Europe, that it was founded on the blood of the martyrs, those men and women who gave their very lives for the sake of the gospel.
St. John Lateran is considered the mother and head of all churches of the city and of the world, as is written, as is inscribed over its entrance, Omnium Orbis et Orbis Ecclesiarum Mater et Caput. Can you explain?
It's the Mother Church because from its baptistry, which was the building which is separate from the church, but where all the Christians of this local church were born eventually, is born all churches. Now, this is a little bit a tricky interpretation. And the reason I say this is because the Mother Church is always referred to as Jerusalem, right? We have this tradition which is very, very strong among the Orientals and among the Westerners, that the first church, the primary church, was the Church of Jerusalem, presided over by James and not by Peter. And in fact, this is one of the ecclesial traditions that we have, that all communities descend originally from the church in Jerusalem, which has a symbolic sense because it represents the new Jerusalem, the heavenly Jerusalem, the Jerusalem that will become the seat of the glory of God. But Rome, because of the fact that it took on importance not only from the religious point of view, where there are many people who accepted the faith, especially first, as I said before, among the Jews that were here, but also among all the other people that were living here, but also because of the fact that Rome acquires a political force. It became the center of the empire. It was the center of the empire at the time of Jesus' death. And so it was a force to be reckoned with. And we know that the role of religion in politics was always very, very important throughout the course of all of history, that emperors wanted to have a unified political base, but also because of the fact that religion many times served as the glue of that political base. And so when eventually the Roman Empire, the political aspect of it, falls into disuse, it is the Bishop of Rome who acquires the power, steps into the vacuum that is created to protect the people, to provide services, to provide judgment, etc. So the Pope then, the Bishop of Rome, begins to acquire a more of a political sense as well as a religious and spiritual sense. And so from this point of view, St. John Lateran is considered then to be the mother of all churches, from which all churches are born, because of the fact of his communion with its bishop.
Father Pugliese, having taken possession of his cathedral, Pope Benedict XVI then went down the road to take possession of the Basilica of St. Mary Major to pay homage to an icon of the Madonna known as Salus Populi Romani.
Yeah, so of course, as Bishop of Rome, that has a very particular meaning for the Romans here, as this local church, because this icon represents something very important. It represents the relationship this church has to Mary, Mother of God, who was seen also as the one who was the protectress, if you want, during difficult times. Especially during times of pestilence and times of war, that the people at difficult times turn, asking Mary's intercession on behalf of the people here in this church. So this image, this icon of Mary is very, very important for the Roman people. And obviously its relationship to the foundation of this church, Mary Major, as we know, is a very ancient church that was constructed and one of the four major basilicas. And so it has a special relationship to the Bishop of Rome and to this local church. So it's more or less his taking possession, but paying homage to Mary, who is understood as the salvation of the Roman people.
My thanks there go to Father Jim Pugliese, director of the Rome-based ecumenical centre Centro Pro Unione, run by the Atonement Friars, of which he is the Superior General. And moving on in the broadcast, once again, in a very personal manner, I'd like to mark the 50th anniversary of the election to the papacy of a much-loved pope, one once known as Good Pope John, and since the year 2000, also Blessed Pope John. For the record, Angelo Roncalli, who was elected as successor of Peter on the 28th of October 1958. I do this by dipping into our Vatican radio archives once again. So get ready to listen to his voice, as well as to testimonies from some of those who knew him. Testimonies I personally collected over the years. John the 23rd is best remembered as Good Pope John, the ordinary man who astonished the world. But while he has gone down in history books as the Pope who launched the Catholic Church into one of its most momentous epochs by calling the Second Vatican Council, it is the very human side to his personality that captured people's hearts and imaginations. People like those you'll be hearing on this programme, all of whom knew Pope John personally.
And I remember when he was carried in the sedia gestatoria, and as a kind of joke, he'd put his fingers in his ears like that and smile. And they were making too much noise, I remember. And he thought they made too much noise.
Quest'aula massima del mondo cristiano è tutta pervasa del richiamo apostolico. Siamo tutti qui partecipi di questo vasto movimento della cristianità.
Because he had a very vibrant voice, although he was an old man, he spoke very fast. Perhaps because he was in a hurry. They said he was a man in a hurry, had a lot to do. And also he used his hands a lot. More than most Italians. He didn't control his hands. He waved, he used them all the time, and he communicated in every possible way with every part of himself, you know.
Ci sia lecito umilmente richiamare che in questo giorno esattamente l'umile successore di San Pietro, 40 anni or sono, chiamato dal Santo Padre Benedetto XV.
So he was walking up the stairs towards the main altar of St. Peter's in St. Peter's Basilica. And as he went, he stumbled and fell. And I could hear the big sigh through the crowd. Most of them knew him from home. a fear, I guess. But he somehow scrambled up to his feet. I guess some Monsignor helped him up. But he got up on the top step and, you know, put his hands up in the sign of victory that he's still all right. And, you know, of course, the people all applauded, as you could expect. But he, with a big smile, then gave his talk.
Winston Churchill's first cousin, Sir John Leslie, was most struck by the Pope's sense of humour.
A great sense of humour. And Monsignor Hebbick, when he went around to the canons of St. Peter's, Monsignor Hebbick said, Your Holiness, I'm just a poor American. He said, are there any? She said, no.
Dopo di me, più tardi, sempre. Posso dire, sempre, questa chiesa d'America è stata provveduta dal Signore di belli ingegni, di anime elette. Chi verrà dopo di me più tardi, sempre.
Rosminian Father John Charles Leroux, who as the son of a former French ambassador to the Holy See grew up in Vatican circles, had a similar tale to tell.
It seemed that when he was elected Pope, the protocol is, what title are you going to give to your brothers or to your family? And his reply was, have you looked at them? And another person, rather impertinent, had asked him, are you related to the Marquis of Roncalli? See, there is a Marquis of Roncalli. And his reply was, I am, my brothers are not.
Questo è, non è stampato, non è scritto.
Well, that amused me.
He said this last part.
I took some of the bishops from Ohio, and I found myself being the interpreter. And Pope John had a marvelous way with him, you see, making fun of himself in a way. Apologized, you see, that he for not being able to speak to them in English. These just little flashes of humor, flashes of, that established a relationship, a mood. And so he's
founder of Boys Town, Monsignor Carol Abbing.
Ohio. And he said he was delighted to meet the bishop from Ohio. So I, being knowing everything, you see, behind, said, Ohio. And so he went on, you see, and then he says, so next time, he said, we have dear friends coming to see him from Ohio. I said, Ohio. So he half turned to me and said, Ohio, Ohio. And I said, this is now when you see, you keep quiet. You see, this is beautiful, beautiful spontaneity. And that was very much him.
And now a word of greeting to our beloved English-speaking children in the Diocese of...
Well, he was known here as, yeah, among the Americans and among the... indeed among the Italians, Johnny Walker, because he loved walking and talking and meeting people and gesticulating and communicating and joking to you.
Former Prior General of the Augustinians, Father Martin Nolan.
We heard that he wandered off without announcing to anybody that he was descending for a walk in the garden. And whenever he went down there, he found nobody working. So that eventually he began to phone around, said, what's happening? Is nobody working in the Vatican? And they explained to him that Pius XII had wished that all the gardeners and others disappear when he took his daily walk. But John the 23rd, I heard, said, oh, no, sure, what's the point of taking a walk if you can't talk to somebody? So leave them there so that we can chat about this and that. And so in this way, the regime changed.
I remember one time, one of the universities, the first time the Pope went there, in our memory anyway, Pope Pius XII did not do that. He gave us a little peroration on how we should study hard to be good priests and to be good religious.
The late Father Redemptus Vallerbeck, a Carmelite.
End of it, and he was trying to tell us how we have to be faithful to this church of ours that all of us love so much. And he was getting on, then he was getting toward the end of his talk, so he said, don't forget this church of ours that we have to love so much, this one holy Catholic, and he couldn't think of the next word. And I could see all the Monsignor around him were embarrassed as anything. And he kept stuttering, and he couldn't get it. He said, well, let's say Roman. He forgot apostolic. Anyway, that was Pope John. You know, it made all of us feel good, especially we who were up for exams. You know, if the Pope couldn't remember apostolic, it gave us a lot of hope. And that's why we were big fans of Pope John the 23rd.
When he was appointed nuncio in Paris, I was in the Foreign Office by then. I'd been called back to the Foreign Office. And I remember one day, I found the car in front of the main door and suitcases everywhere, and the nuncio coming down the stairs. So he told me, oh, yes, you know, I've received a telegram from Rome asking me to go to come urgently to Rome. An obedient son of the church, as you see, I'm starting on the moment. But I'm not taking the aeroplane. In fact, one took very seldom the aeroplane still in those years, nor the night train. I'm taking my car. And as the nuncio must stop at every great cathedral that he sees and inspects what's happening there and so on, speaks to the bishop, I'll be in Rome in about 10 years' time. By that time, the problem would have been solved by somebody else.
che da noi, ma insomma si tratta sempre di un'energia vera a tutore della Chiesa Cattolica sulla quale si può contare.
I did go back to the Vatican while he was reigning during his pontificate, and he had developed, for instance, the court size. He had also taken up in his own dressing things that had disappeared. He dressed sometimes with that bonnet that you see on the portraits of Julius II by Raphael, and that had disappeared. He used the room of the Tronetto, which is a little throne room next to the office of the Pope, which Pastor XII very rarely... In fact, I never saw Pastor XII use that room, but he used it again. He sat on the throne and once for the audiences of officials, not in his desk, he was on the throne, and there were two armchairs at the foot of the throne. And that's why when he received the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh, there was a display of the court that amazed all the English people. The Duke and the Queen came back absolutely thrilled by the display of that Renaissance court in its full splendour.
I hope you enjoyed part four of my series of these very personal features I put together for you, focusing on the figure of Pope John the 23rd, blessed John the 23rd, to mark the 50th anniversary of his election as successor of Peter. Finally, time to join our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, the Pope's own Latinist. Do watch the change of tone. Going to speak to you about the Emperor Hadrian. He was a bit of an explorer, Hadrian, judging by this villa where he accumulated.
Well, the fact is, yeah, he spent most of his time. Don't forget, 117 to 39, so he was an emperor for 22 years. And so the fact is, he spent most of his time going around the world, military exploits, way out to India. He was all out. And his villa out in Tivoli reflects what he learned around the world, the things he saw in Egypt, the things he saw in Greece, the things he saw in Syria. He was very impressed by this stuff, and he came back home, and he wanted his villa to reflect all the things around the world.
So it's correct to say that he was an exceptional explorer.
He was an exceptional explorer. He was a good man, too. And in the end, he became a little kind of paranoid. After 22 years, he said, "I'm tired of running the world."
Yes.
I feel sorry for him because he was a good man.
So explorer is a word of Latin origin, right?
Explorare, yes, to look into, to investigate, just, you know, even like investigating anything. A book is explorare.
And exceptional?
And excipere is to take out. So to be exceptional is to be taken out of the group.
So he was definitely a little bit above.
Oh, yeah, he was. And he was cultured and everything else. In fact, is the big thing that, I don't say a lot of people around Rome didn't like, he spoke Greek and was more Greek than Latin. And he brought all this Greek stuff in. If you go out to Adrian's villa, it's all Greek
philosophers
or Greekish.
Rome's. One of his favorite maxims was, "Not for myself, but for my people." How does one say that?
Non mihi populo autem meo. Non mihi popolo autem meo. The most famous thing, you know, is his tomb is right across the street here.
Casa San Andrea,
yes. And the only words that we have written by him is a famous little poem where he talks to his soul. Animula blandula, my little soul, my caressing soul, you're going to go now into the underworld and so forth and so on. He talks to his soul. Like, and the afterlife, it's very, very beautiful, about animula blandula vagula. You're going to wander around now in the underworld. And he said, "I'm going to be sorry because you're never going to see the light again." That's the only thing we have written by him.
How would you say underworld in Latin?
Well, inferos, you know, lower things. And he says to your soul, you're going to wander around in the soul, and I'm going to be sad because you're never going to be smiling again, etc., etc. But that's Adrian's little poem to his soul before he died.
Well, you said that he didn't write very much.
No, Adrian. That's all. The only little bit of writing we have.
But in general, did the Romans speak about death a lot?
No, not too much.
Did they have funerals? Or?
Well, they had funerals, but it's interesting to see, like, the classics. People would just kind of die, and they would just kind of take this for granted, not to get too excited. Really, Cicero talks about people, well, he died last week, and they kind of go on.
How would they say that in Latin?
Priori hebdomada decessit. He, you know, took off last week. And in fact, his sister has a famous phrase about his father. People can't believe it to this day. Pater nobis decessit. Father died for us last week, and Cicero goes on and talks about, I don't know, fish in the market. But apparently he's talking about his father's death. They weren't upset like we are.
How would they have said upset?
Turbatus perturbatus, non perturbabantur. The Romans weren't disturbed as we are with funerals and stuff. And most people were cremated and just disappeared. They didn't have glorious funerals, you know. It's another story.
In fact, they haven't left us cemeteries like the Etruscans, for example.
No.
Getting back to the fact that the Emperor Hadrian was such an explorer, there's something I wanted to ask you. Did they have maps in Roman times? And how would you say map?
Tabula geographica, a geographic tablet or table.
And where did they have these?
Well, maps? They had the fact is we have them from the Middle Ages. We've gotten like figures. I mean, they knew everything, like from Iran or Iraq up to England. And the Mediterranean, and interesting to see, like, where they have Africa. They had the coast of North Africa they knew about. But the continent they didn't know about. And we have maps of the Romans where they say, hic sunt leones, here the lions are. And we don't know any more about it because the Romans didn't get into the continent of Africa. But the coastline from Spain out to Palestine and Gaul and North Africa, the Romans knew perfectly.
You said he went to India, Hadrian.
Well, he got just about out that far. We'd say it's Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, Afghanistan, right in there. Oh, that's where the Romans were.
These maps, they were physically on stone or?
We even have some parchments and stuff from very, very old times, 2nd, 3rd century. Some of these old things are still around. And you can see, like, in the Vatican and stuff, they have maps, and I said, well, you know, 1565. I said, well, this map looks like a Roman map to me. We have figures of these things around parchments. The Romans had parchments in Egypt where they had all this stuff. Library of Alexandria, they had all that stuff. Things that have been left over, found in the sand, you know, in the pyramids. Ooh, surprising.
And heartfelt thanks there once again to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, the Pope's own Latinist. And that brings us up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'll be back again at the same time tomorrow. Meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.